Chapter 15. Binet said, "Am I to understand that the village was destroyed by fire 9 times in a row, Sephara? And they rebuilt it every time?" "My colleague Balak thinks there may be only 7 villages piled up in the Hill of Thombo," the archaeologist replied. "And he may be right, actually. Things are pretty jumbled down toward the lowest levels. But 7 villages, 9 villages, no matter how many it is exactly, it doesn't change the fundamental concept. Here, look at these charts. I've worked them up from my excavation notes. Of course, what we did was just a preliminary dig, a quick slice through the whole hill, with the really meticulous work left for a later expedition. We discovered the hill too late in our work to do anything else. But these charts will give you an idea. You aren't going to be bored, are you? All this stuff does interest you, doesn't it, Binet?"
"I find it completely fascinating. Do you think I'm so totally preoccupied with astronomy that I can't pay attention to any of the other disciplines? Besides, archaeology and astronomy sometimes go hand in hand. We've learned more than a little about the movements of the suns through the heavens by studying the ancient astronomical monuments that you people have been digging up here and there around the world. Here, let me see." They were in Sephara's office. She had asked Binet to come there to discuss a problem which, she said, had unexpectedly arisen in the course of her research, which puzzled him because he didn't immediately see how an astronomer could help an archaeologist in her work, despite what he had just said about archaeology and astronomy sometimes going hand in hand. But he was always glad to have a chance to visit with Sephara. They had met initially 5 years before, when they were working together on an interdisciplinary faculty committee that was planning the expansion of the university library. Though Sephara had been out of the country most of the time since then doing field work, she and Binet did enjoy meeting for lunch now and then when she was there. He found her challenging, highly intelligent, and abrasive in a refreshing sort of way. What she saw in him, he had no idea. Perhaps just an intellectually stimulating young man who wasn't involved in the poisonous rivalries and feuds of her own field and had no apparent designs on her body. Sephara unfolded the charts, huge sheets of thin parchment-like paper on which complex, elegant diagrams had been ruled with pencil, and she and Binet bent forward to examine them at close range. He had been telling the truth when he said he was fascinated by archaeology. Ever since he'd been a boy, he had enjoyed reading the narratives of the great explorers of antiquity, such men as Marpin, Shelbeck, and of course Galdo 221. He found the remote past nearly as exciting to think about as the remote reaches of interstellar space. His contract mate, Raista, wasn't greatly pleased by his friendship with Sephara. She had rather testily implied a couple of times that it was Sephara herself who fascinated him, not her field of research. But Binet thought Raista's jealousy was absurd. Certainly, Sephara was an attractive woman. It would be disingenuous to pretend otherwise. But she was relentlessly non-romantic, and every man on campus knew it. Besides, she was something like 10 years older than Binet. Handsome as she was, Binet had never thought of her with any sort of intimate intentions. "What we have here, first, is a cross-section of the entire hill," Sephara told him. "I've plotted each separate level of occupation in a schematic way. The newest settlements at the top, naturally. Huge stone walls, what we call the Cyclopean style of architecture, typical of the Beklemont culture in its mature period of development. This line here, in the level of the Cyclopean walls, represents a layer of charcoal remains, enough charcoal to indicate a widespread conflagration that must have utterly wiped the city out. And here, below the Cyclopean level and the burn line, is the next oldest settlement, which is constructed in a different style." "Exactly. You see how I've drawn the stones of the walls? It's what we call the crosshatch style, characteristic of the early Beklemont culture, or perhaps the culture that developed into Beklemont. Both these styles can be seen in the Beklemont era ruins that surround the Hill of Thombo. The main ruins are Cyclopean, and here and there we've found a little crosshatch stuff, just a mere outcropping or two, which we call Proto-Beklemont. Now look here, at the border between the crosshatch settlement and the Cyclopean ruins above it."
"Another fire line?" Binet said.
"Another fire line, yes. What we have in this hill is like a sandwich. A layer of human occupation, a layer of charcoal, another layer of human occupation, another layer of charcoal. So what I think happened is something like this. During the time of the crosshatch people, there was a devastating fire that scorched a pretty good chunk of the Sagakan Peninsula and forced the abandonment of the Thombo village and other crosshatch-style villages nearby. Afterward, when the inhabitants came back and began to rebuild,
They used a brand new and more elaborate architectural style, which we call Cyclopean because of the huge building stones. But then came another fire and wiped out the Cyclopean settlement. At that point, the people of the area gave up trying to build cities on the hill of Thombo, and this time when they rebuilt, they chose another site nearby, which we term Beklemont Major. We've believed for a long time that Beklemont Major was the first true human city, emerging from the smaller crosshatch-type proto-Beklemont period settlements scattered all around it. What Thombo tells us is that there was at least one important Cyclopean city in the area before Beklemont Major existed. And the Beklemont Major site, Binet said, shows no trace of fire damage? No. So it wasn't there when the city on top of Thombo was burned. Eventually, the whole Beklemont culture collapsed, and Beklemont Major itself was abandoned. But that was for other reasons having to do with climatic shifts. Fire had nothing to do with it. That was perhaps 1,000 years ago. But the fire that wrecked the topmost Thombo village seems to have been much earlier than that. I'd guess about 1,000 years earlier. The radiocarbon dates from the charcoal samples will give us a more precise figure when we get them from the lab. And the crosshatch settlement, how old is that? Orthodox archaeological belief has been that the fragmentary crosshatch structures we found here and there on the Sagakan Peninsula are only a few generations older than the Beklemont Major site. After the Thombo excavation, I don't think so. My guess is that the crosshatch settlement on that hill is 2,000 years older than the Cyclopean buildings on top of it. 2,000? And you say there are other settlements below that one? Look at the chart, Safara said. Here's number 3. A kind of architecture we've never seen before. Nothing at all like crosshatch work. Then another burn line. Settlement number 4. And a burn line, number 5. A burn line. Then numbers 6, 7, 8, and 9. Or, if Balak's reading is correct, just numbers 6 and 7. And each one destroyed by a great fire. That seems pretty remarkable to me. A deadly cycle of destruction striking again and again and again in the same place. The remarkable thing, said Safara, in a curiously somber tone, is that each of these settlements appears to have flourished for approximately the same length of time before being destroyed by fire. The layers of occupation are quite extraordinarily similar in thickness. We're still waiting for the lab report, you understand. But I don't think my eyeball estimate is very far off. And Balak's figures are the same as mine. Unless we're completely mistaken, we're looking at a minimum of 14,000 years of prehistory in the Hill of Thombo. And during those 14,000 years, the hill was periodically swept by massive fires that forced its abandonment with clockwork regularity. One fire every 2,000 years, just about exactly. What? A shiver traveled along Binet's spine. His mind was beginning to leap to all manner of improbable and disturbing conclusions. Wait, Safara said. There's more. She opened a drawer and took out a stack of glossy photographs. These are pictures of the Thombo tablets. Mudrin 505 has the originals. The paleographer, you know. He's been trying to decipher them. They're made of baked clay. We found these 3 in level 3, and these in level 5. They're both written in extremely primitive scripts, and the writing on the older ones is so ancient that Mudrin can't even make a start on them. But he's been able very tentatively to puzzle out a couple of dozen words from the level 3 tablets, which are written in an early form of the Beklemont script. So far as he can tell at this point, they're an account of the destruction of a city by fire, the work of angry gods who periodically find it necessary to punish mankind for wickedness. Periodically? That's right. Does it begin to sound familiar? The Apostles of Flame. My God, Safara, what have you stumbled on here? That's what I've been asking myself since Mudrin brought me the first sketchy translations. The archaeologist swung around to face Binet, and for the first time Binet saw how bleary her eyes were, how tense and drawn her face. She looked almost distraught. Do you see now why I asked you to come here? I can't talk about this with anyone in the department. Binet, what am I going to do? If any of this becomes public, Mondior 71 and his whole crazy crew will proclaim it from the rooftops that I've discovered firm archaeological proof of their crackpot theories. You think so? What else? Safara tapped the charts. Here's evidence of repeated fiery destruction at 2,000-year intervals, roughly, over a period of many thousands of years. And these tablets, The way it looks now, they might actually be some sort of prehistoric version of the Book of Revelations. Taken together, they provide, if not actual confirmation of the rantings of the apostles, then at least a solid rational underpinning for their whole mythology. But repeated fires at a single site don't prove that there was worldwide devastation, Binet objected. It's the periodicity that worries me, said Sephara. It's too neat and too close to what Mondior's been saying. I've been looking at the Book of Revelations. The Sagakan Peninsula is a holy place to the apostles. Did you know that? The sacred site where the gods formerly made themselves visible to humanity, so they say. And therefore, it stands to reason. Listen to me, it stands to reason, she said, laughing bitterly, that the gods would preserve Sagakan as a warning to mankind of the doom that will come again and again if we don't alter our wicked ways. Binet stared at her, stunned. He knew very little about the apostles and their teachings, really. Such pathological fantasizing had never held any interest for him, and he had been too busy with his scientific work to pay heed to Mondior's windy apocalyptic prophecies. But now, the memory of the conversation he had had some weeks before with Theramon 762 at the Six Suns Club burst with furious impact into his consciousness. Won't be the first time the world has been destroyed. The gods have deliberately made mankind imperfect and given us a single year, one of their divine years, not one of our little ones, in which to shape up. That's called a year of godliness, and it's exactly 2,049 of our years long. No, 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 no. Idiocy, claptrap, hysterical folly. There was more. Again and again, when the year of godliness has ended, the gods have discovered that we're still wicked and sinful. And so they have destroyed the world by sending down heavenly flames. So say the apostles, anyway. No. No! Binet, Sephara said. Are you all right? Just thinking, he told her. By darkness, it's true. You'd give the apostles complete confirmation. Not necessarily. It would still be possible for people who are capable of thinking clearly to reject Mondior's ideas. The destruction of Thombo by fire, even the repeated destruction of Thombo at apparently regular intervals of approximately 2,000 years, doesn't in any way prove that the whole world was destroyed by fire, or that some such great fire must inevitably come again. Why should the past necessarily be recapitulated in the future? But people who are capable of thinking clearly are in a minority, of course. The rest of them will be swayed by Mondior's use of my findings and go into an immediate panic. You know, don't you, that the apostles claim the next great world-destroying fire is due to strike us next year? Yes, Binet said hoarsely. Theramon tells me that they've pinpointed the exact day. It's a 2,049-year cycle, actually, and this is the 2,048th year. And in something like 11 or 12 more months, if you believe Mondior, the sky will turn black and fire will descend on us. I think the 19th of Theptar is when it's supposed to happen. Theramon? The newspaper man? Yes. He's a friend of mine, actually. He's interested in the whole apostles thing, and he's been interviewing one of their high priests or whatever. Theramon told me. Sephira's hand shot out and caught Binet's arm, her fingers digging in with astonishing force. You've got to promise me you won't say a word about any of this to him, Binet. To Theramon? No, of course not. You haven't published your findings yet. It wouldn't be proper for me to say anything to anybody. But, of course, he's a very honorable man. Her iron grip relaxed, but only a little. Sometimes things get said between friends, off the record. But you know, Binet, there's no such thing as off the record when you're talking to someone like Theramon. If he sees a reason to use it, he'll use it, no matter what he may have promised you, or however honorable you like to think he is. Well, perhaps. Trust me. And if Theramon were to find out what I've come up with here, you can bet your ears it'll be all over the Chronicle half a day later. That would ruin me professionally, Binet. It would be all I need to become known as the scientist who provided the apostles with proof of their absurd claims. The apostles are totally repugnant to me, Binet. I don't want to offer them any sort of aid and comfort, and I certainly don't want to seem to be publicly espousing their crackpot ideas. Don't worry, Binet said. I won't breathe a word. You mustn't. As I say, it would wreck me. I've come back to the university to have my research grant renewed. My Thombo findings are already stirring up controversy in the department, because they challenge the established view of Beklemont as the oldest urban center. But if Theramon somehow manages to wrap the Apostles of Flame around my neck on top of everything else... But Binet was barely listening. He was sympathetic to Sephira's problem, and certainly he would do nothing to cause difficulties for her. Theramon would hear not one word about her research from him. His mind had moved on, though, to other things, vastly troublesome things. Phrases out of Theramon's account of the teachings of the apostles continued to churn in his memory. In something like 14 months, the suns will all disappear. The stars will shoot flame down out of a black sky. The exact time of the catastrophe can be calculated scientifically. A black sky. The suns will all disappear. Darkness, Binet muttered harshly. Can it be possible? Sephira had gone on talking. At his outburst, she halted in mid-sentence. You aren't paying attention to me, Binet. What? Oh, yes, of course I'm paying attention. You were saying that I mustn't let Theramon know anything about this, because it would harm your reputation, and, listen, Sephira, do you think we could continue discussing this some other time? This evening, or tomorrow afternoon, or whenever? I've got to get over to the observatory right away. Don't let me detain you, then, she said coldly. No, I don't mean it that way. What you've been telling me is of the most colossal interest to me, and importance, tremendous importance. More than I can even say at this point. But I've got to check something. Something with a direct bearing on everything we've been discussing. She gave him a close look. Your face is flushed. Your eyes are wild, Binet. You seem so strange all of a sudden. Your mind's a million miles away. What's going on? I'll tell you later, he said, halfway out the door. Later. I promise you.